Welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Good evening, good morning, good night, good second breakfast, whenever you are, wherever you are. My name is Laura Gonzalez, and I'd like to welcome you to Lunatic Mondays, Lunes Lunaticos, the very first bilingual show for CSMP, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And you know, I always say we are the first because there's a second one. Saturdays, we have Paganos del Mundo, Pagaos del Mundo, which is on Spanish and Portuguese. But enough about that. I'd like to welcome you tonight to listen to this wonderful author that I just literally stumbled upon. And I'm so happy that he said yes to come to the show. So I'm going to introduce him and read you his bio. J. Allen Cross is a practicing witch of Mexican, Native American, and European descent, whose craft was shaped by his Catholic upbringing and mixed family culture. Living in his home state of Oregon, he works as a psychic, medium, and occult specialist for a well-known paranormal investigation team out of the Portland metro area. When he's not investigating, he enjoys providing spells and potions to his local community, exploring haunted and abandoned places, consulting for other workers and investigators, and of course, writing about witchcraft and folk magic. You can follow him on Instagram at Oregon Wood Witch, and there is an underscore between the words. So Oregon underscore Wood underscore Witch. And Jay, thank you for being on the show tonight. Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me here.
I am so very happy to have your book, of course, American Brujería, Modern Mexican-American Folk Magic. And before we go into the book, obviously, I have to know you and to know about you. So you obviously identify as a witch, but how did you know about witchcraft, and when did you learn that you were a witch?
It happened for me very early. It was something that I just had an innate knowing around. I was very much kind of the weird kid. And I know that we all sort of say that, but I, at a very early age, I knew that this was going to be my path. And I would tell people as a very small person that I wanted to be a witch. And I would pretend that our family Bibles were spell books, which in a Catholic family, you're really not supposed to do. I guess because we're in the fall right now, it's a good story that when I was really young, around the time when most kids were putting up flyers for like their lawn mowing or their leaf raking or whatever, I was asking my parents how to write exorcist, the word, because I couldn't spell yet, to offer those services to my local neighborhood. It turns out when you're like six, no one really wants to hire you as an exorcist. And to be honest, I'm not sure how I even knew what that was. But I always knew that this would be something that I would be doing. In the fifth grade, not too long after that, we had to do a report on what we wanted to do for a career when we grew up. And I wrote that I wanted to be a witch as a job. And they made me redo it because they didn't think I was taking it seriously. And yet here we are.
Right.
So for me, it was, it came very early. And one of the first sort of experiences that I had that really sort of confirmed it was my parents had signed me up for t-ball, like little league baseball, when I was very young, and I hated it. I was not good at baseball, and I found out that if I could make it rain, I didn't have to play. And so that was kind of my earliest remembrance of active intentional spell work, was around that time.
Wow, that is so amazing. So here in your bio, you say, and then you have mentioned that you grew up Catholic, right? Mm-hmm. And I am gonna, sorry, put you through my joke. And every time I say it, I say it's the last time I say it, but I can help myself. And the disclaimer goes, I can say this because I'm Mexican. People who are not Mexican cannot say this joke. Thank you. Mexico is the most pagan country in the world. Don't tell the Mexicans. They think they're Catholic. With that said, I know in my experience, being Mexican, growing up in Mexico, I didn't find out the difference between the so-called Catholic religion that we practice in Mexico and paganism, right? It wasn't until I was like probably 15 or 16 years old that I was doing also like a schoolwork project, and I discovered that paganism was a thing and how what we practice in Mexico was not Catholicism, but it's like mostly paganism. Did you have a moment such as that when you discovered, like, wait a minute, this is not what Catholics are supposed to be doing, yet our family is Catholic and we're doing all these things?
You know, for me, it all seemed fairly normal, simply because I was always very aware of how witchy Catholicism is. And, you know, I grew up as an altar boy, you know, the whole nine yards. And so I'm standing up there at an altar with some guy dressed in robes, serving up flesh and blood and lighting candles and incense and Latin. And it all seemed very occult to me anyway. So then when it transferred to the home life, where I would then have a mom who would, you know, read tarot cards at the dinner table. And occasionally there would be candles lit to try and get rid of a boss who wasn't very nice. That all seemed very normal and Catholic to me. And that was something too, where once we kind of exited the world of Catholicism, and then I really ran over to sort of paganism and witchcraft and all of that, I realized how close it was then, because I'm like, okay, well, in church, we're lighting candles and we're asking for things. And then over here in Wicca, which is supposed to be so far away, you know, we're lighting candles and asking for things. It didn't seem that much of a jump to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, for everybody that jumps from Catholicism, or as my friends used to call it, recovering Catholic, you know, it is very similar. And this is something, I am so glad that I'm talking to you today, because this is something I have tried to convey to everyone who is not Mexican or Mexican American. Like, you don't understand that in Mexico, we do not practice Catholicism. It just is not. It's paganism, and it's got the name of we're Catholic, but we're not. More on that, because in your book you talk about the Virgin of Guadalupe so much, and of course she's a goddess. But anyway, speaking of expressing your spirituality when you were young, did it ever occur to you, like, okay, I love this so much, I want to be a Catholic priest?
Yes, actually, when I was a child, I did want to be a priest. And I actually talked to our priest. We actually were blessed to have a very wonderful, non-creepy Catholic priest at our church who we actually loved dearly. And I that was something that I really wanted to do. And to be honest, even as an adult, I do consider some forms of clergy every now and again. I've looked into a few different types to see which ones will be okay with me. Number one, being married to another man, and also might be okay with me embracing kind of the stranger, more, I guess, magical side of the practice. But I have yet to actually get real credentials. I am technically a reverend through the Universal Life Church. So if you need to be married, I can do that. But as far as going to be a real clergyman, not yet, but maybe at some point.
Yeah, always a witch for hire will right. self-promote their business. We are on the same page, on the same book, on the same library, because I also am a shameless self-promoter, Tarot by Laura. So when did you actually technically left the Catholic Church? What made you say, like, okay, this is just not working for me, I'm going to paganism?
Yeah, we were about, I want to say I was about 10 years old when we left the church. And I had grown up with it. I had gone through Sunday school and First Communion and all of that. And it was a big part of our lives. And then my parents got divorced. And when you're a Catholic, they don't like it when you come back to church after the divorce. But it actually came at a very timely era in our lives, because right about that time, right about around the divorce, I was starting to show all kinds of signs of being a budding witch, which was very at odds with what I was being told in church. And yet at the same time, I was starting to get the first inklings that I may be gay. And so it was kind of a good time for us to kind of split from the church and go a different direction, at which point I really that, you know, me and my family were very different, and that we had certain qualities that I didn't see in my classmates around me as far as magic was concerned. And I really wanted to explore that. I really wanted to see what that was about. And so it was a funny shift, because of course, right, as soon as you leave the Catholic Church, then you run the opposite direction, right? That's when I found Wicca and like witchcraft and all that stuff. And of course, me, like many people who started doing witchcraft in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was Wicca and that was it. So that's what I started with, and became very pagan and became very anti- anything Christianity and all of that, because, you know, I'm a pagan, I'm a gay person, all of this. And it wasn't until actually many years later that I've kind of came back to the Catholicism and reclaimed that sort of connection that they had, and realized that I could in fact do both, even mm-hmm. if a lot of people told me that that wasn't possible.
Yeah. And just to be clear, and I don't mean to speak for you, but I think I can read on you that mm-hmm. sentiment of, we're not criticizing the religion. Mm-hmm. I, for one, I am like, more power to you, practice what give you love and power. But again, you know, it's hard to understand for people how intertwined paganism, magical practice, and Catholicism is mixed for Mexican people, and mm-hmm. obviously Mexican American people. And then the other icky stuff that is happening on the church and has happened since colonial times and keeps happening to this day. We're not going to talk about that, because this show is not about that, but it's there, it's yeah. real, and it's happening. And unfortunately, it's predators, guys by a name of clergy and a position of power, which is, you know, classic abuse. But anyway, yeah, I remember being 16 and starting calling myself a pagan. People already called me a witch. So I started calling myself a pagan, and I remove everything that was Catholic from my practice. And I just practiced with like the indigenous part of our culture. And I call it paganism. Now I know better that that is not paganism. And being earth-based practices, they are not the same, you know. But it's just so different, and so many different ways of being a witch, mm-hmm. you know, that people also don't understand that as a Mexican, you say, I'm a witch and I'm Mexican, and then people assume right away, like, oh, you do brujeria. And I, for one, like, no, I don't do brujeria, but I am a Mexican witch, which is, you know, one, they're not mutually exclusive, right? Yes. So anyway, I'm having so much fun. I want to take a break early so we can come back and then deep dive into the book, because it is amazing. I love it. So I invite you, Jay, and everybody who is listening, that you listen to the song. I love it. It's by a group called La Perla, and the name of it is Bruja. So I want you all to enjoy the song. And don't forget that we're coming back with more here on Lunatic Mondays.
querían bajar, tumba, la querían bajar, tumba, la querían bajar, tumba, 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 por todo lo que sabía. La querían bajar, tumba, la querían bajar, tumba, la querían bajar, tumba, 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 porque hacía lo que quería. Salía de noche por cómo se vestía, porque fumaba hierba y a nadie obedecía, porque tomaba trago, bailaba todo el día, por puta, por monja, por fea bandida. Mamá a mí me decían la bruja, mamá a mí me decían la bruja. Porque salía de noche, por cómo se vestía, porque fumaba hierba y a nadie obedecía, porque tomaba trago, bailaba todo el día, por puta, por monja, por fea bandida.
We're back here on Lunatic Mondays, Lunas Lunaticos. Just to remind you that obviously you can listen to everything and anything that is on the CSMP website, the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. You can access that by going to circlesanctuary.org and then just look on our work. And right there, you will find the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast. And underneath that tab, you will find the one that says archives. And they are over 500 hours of podcasts there for you to listen, to download, to share. And just to remind you all that we will have some new interviews coming up in November, the rest of November. We have, of course, Lunatic Mondays and Lunes Lunaticos. You can go to the archives if you missed the one for November 1st. And we also have Paganos del Mundo with Christine Ortiz, with Carolina Amor, with Harwood Willeva, and Patricia Finkler here in November. And also to remind you, please, to listen to Reverend Selena Fox on Mystic, Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality on Wednesdays and Sundays. And remember that twice a month we have Moon Magic with David and Janet Ewing, and twice a month we have Circle Talk with Deborah Rose on Tuesdays. So everything and anything that you want to learn about Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, you can find also on Facebook, and we are on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, this, that, and the other, anywhere that you find podcasts, we are there. And Jay, welcome back. Thank you for sitting through the break. I hope you had a chance to run for water or to, I don't know, feed the cat or something. Do you have a cat? Do you even have a cat?
I do have a cat, yes.
There you go. Okay, well, the life of a psychic. It's a hit or miss, right? You either have a cat or a dog. Most people do. Can you believe this? One time I told somebody I don't like cats, and they told me I shouldn't be saying I'm a witch. Yeah.
Because those two things are clearly connected so viscerally.
Right. Anyway, enough about me and my silly encounters with silly people. American Brujeria, Modern Mexican-American Folk Magic. Wow. What inspired you to write this book?
Wants to really...
Oh, you broke up a little bit there. So I didn't hear the beginning.
A lot of things really came together at once to inspire the inception of this book. One of the main things that inspired me, of course, is my community, specifically those of us who are both Mexican and American. Because we often end up sort of isolated in the middle. We're this very strange gray area between, you know, Mexicans from Mexico and Americans, where we're not quite either one anymore. And that's always been a hard place for me to be growing up, because I always very much identified with my Mexican heritage, but my Spanish is not very good. And I grew up in a house that was very much American, even though we were attempting to reclaim that Mexican heritage as I grew up, which was very important to us. But I was looking around at my fellow Mexican American people who were also spirit workers, who were also doing the magic. And I realized that all of us in one shape or another really found ourselves doing the same type of magic, where we had our, you know, our novena candles to Guadalupe, we have our saints, we have these very special herbs that are well known to Mexican folk magic, but it was different from what I would see being called brujería in Mexico. But you'd ask these Mexican American people, oh, so what is this called that you're doing nowadays? And they would tell you, oh, well, this is brujería. And I thought that was very interesting, the way that the people in the US were trying to reclaim the word that seems to be very scary in kind of other places, and kind of make it into something that's a little bit more mainstream, a little bit more American. And so I wanted to spotlight this interesting kind of folk magic that was happening in this in-between place for those of us who are both kind of Mexican and American. Whenever you have an isolated community, they will form their own folk magic. And I was noticing that was happening in modern day Mexican American communities. And so I really wanted to highlight this and spotlight this, because it was something that I realized I was doing too. And it's one of those things that I talk about this in the book a little bit. It just sort of finds its way into your hands. You just kind of look up one day and you have saint statues and novena candles. It just kind of ends up coming to you. And so I really wanted to talk about this, because it is different from the magic that we see in Mexico. But you can see that it is rooted in those traditions. And then it changes the way that we all change through the process of immigration. So it's really kind of an extension of our story, like what happens after we leave Mexico, what happens once we get to the United States, what happens to our children and our magic as this moves forward. And that was something I really wanted to explore, because a lot of the times when we see folk magic, we like to think of it as something that happened a long time ago that we are kind of recreating now. And the old way, the traditional way, the way they did it hundreds of years ago is like the only way. But what we don't realize is that folk magic especially grows with the folk and changes with the folk. And I wanted to kind of point out to people, or at least attempt to understand, even myself, what is happening with this growing and changing folk magic, this living, breathing tradition, and where it's going and what's happening with it now. So that was kind of the main inspiration for this, was wondering kind of what is happening with this magic, but also wanting to spotlight my community of Mexican Americans who are often kind of either swept under the rug one direction or the other. They kind of, you know, the American people lump us in with the Mexican people lump us in with the American people. So I wanted to kind of just spotlight that community directly, yeah, and see what happens. And it was very well received.
Yeah, and that is so true, because there are so many ways of being Mexican as there are many ways of being a witch. And, you know, I noticed too, as being a Mexican who grew up in Mexico, who is a witch, who does not practice brujeria, who does not practice anything remotely close to Catholicism, that there are so many ways of being a Mexican witch, and that not all Mexican witches practice brujería. Or in my case, it took me years for people to understand that Mexican and witch does not mean I'm a santera. Like, everybody will come to me like, you practice santeria, right? No. I'm a pagan witch. I've been a pagan witch since I was like 15 years old. So no, there's so many different ways of being a witch. You have your Catholic witches, you have your Irish witches, you have your Christian witches, you have your Jewish witches, you have your Muslim witches, believe it or not. So there are so many different ways of being a witch. And I noticed, too, being an immigrant myself, 23 years in the States, that most people who are from Mexico and or Mexican American, the way they practice their witchcraft is very, very rooted on that Catholic, I'm doing big air quotes for those that cannot see me, that Catholicism that we practice in Mexico that is just one step away from paganism. But anyway, well, thank you for putting it on a book. And I know you, because I follow you on Insta, just like everybody else. And I noticed that you had a very, very great amount of feedback of people saying thank you for voicing out the fact that you don't have to speak Spanish to be a bruja. You don't have to have been born in Mexico to be a bruja. And I say this with all sincerity to all my fellow Mexican-American friends. I know some of us Mexicans from Mexico have shown you. Forget that. Forget that. Not all of us Mexicans are like that. And there are some of us who are really fighting tooth and nail for you to be recognized as what you are. Not that you need recognition from anybody, but if we marginalize minorities or liminal space people, as you put it on the book, if we don't unite to fight for everybody, then everybody loses, you know? And I think this opens the road also for people like me, who are Mexican from Mexico, to understand like how we're not that different. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just separated by a language that for whatever reason you lost, just like we are separated from our indigenous roots in the language because circumstances that were out of our control. Mm-hmm. So with that said, I love also that at the beginning of the book, you talk so much about like, we're going to talk about Catholicism, so we're going to talk about church, we're going to talk about the saints. It's kind of like, enter at your own will, you know, kind of like, this is not traditional pagan magic, because the pagan magic in Mexico is just like, kind of like getting there, evolving, as you said. Mm-hmm. And I love, love, love all of the warnings that you mention in this book about practicing with caution. Mm-hmm. Why? I'm not going to give it all out. I know I promised you we were not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about the controversy. I'm going to mention, you know, when you talk about La Muerte. Mm-hmm. Why it is so important that we understand that these practices are for certain people only.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so important because we have to remember that Mexican people are colonized people. And that is something that is very important to understand, and not only about our culture, but about our history. That is something that we've been through before. And so when we get really neat, beautiful, kind of also scary spirits like La Santa Muerte, and then it kind of escapes past those who are kind of her family, her base, her cult, as they say. Once it escapes past that and gets into the mainstream, a lot of people start to hear about it, then what happens next is they become commodified and commercialized. And what happens with that is because people are wanting to make money off of them. And that's something that we see with a lot of witchcraft, where then in order to make it more marketable, we then take away all the scary parts. We then take away all the risk and say, witchcraft has no rules. Anyone can do witchcraft. Buy this thing. Same thing is happening with La Santa Muerte, where people are like, oh, she's absolutely harmless. Nothing ever will happen to you. She's nothing but made up of love and light and motherly affection. And first of all, I think it's very sexist the way that we take these very powerful female spirits and pigeonhole them as loving mothers. There's more to the feminine than being a mother. And I think people forget that at the end of the day, the spirit is death. And that is not a metaphor. That is not a symbol. That is the reality. And a lot of times when people are trying to sell her, they will tell people like, oh yeah, no, this is death, but it's the romantic, beautiful death. And I'm like, but you can't just take the romantic, beautiful part of death. Yeah. There's also the ugly part that comes with it. And what I'm seeing a lot of, and the reason why I wrote the chapter the way that I did, is because I get a lot of DMs from people from far outside of the Mexican community who are like, hey, I've been lighting these candles to La Santa Muerte, but they keep going out, or this keeps happening, or that keeps happening. And they're like, what do you think is wrong? And I'm like, well, first of all, why are you attempting to summon death into your home? And the responses often are kind of like, oh, well, you know, I don't know, I'm just kind of drawn to it or whatever. And that's, you know, and far be it for me to tell people what to do with their practice, but if we're going to summon death into our home, we better have a reason. We better know what we're looking for here, besides just something to put on our Instagram that makes us look dark and misunderstood and mysterious, which is what I'm seeing happening with the spirit a lot. And on top of that too, kind of coming back to this idea that, you know, we come from colonized people, once this thing becomes mainstream, we have to remember that La Santa Muerte is so important to Mexico because so anyone else to turn to. And so they went to her. Now, but
you broke up a little bit, so I just want to clarify, you were saying that she is so important to the Mexican people because some other people don't have anywhere else to go but to her. So please continue. Thank you.
Absolutely. But then once it hits popularity, then what happens is these people who had nowhere else to go, these people who were oppressed, then their oppressors come and join them in this space. And then once they've populated it, then they once more go, no, there is no space for you here. And that's what concerns me about people who have no real reason to be working with the Santa Muerte, to go there and do that, because then they're just taking up space that really is meant for people who have nowhere else to go. And that's something I talk about in the book too, is like, you know, is there a saint that will listen to you? Is there another spirit that will listen to you? If so, go speak to them, but you know, leave this space for the people who don't have anywhere else to go. And I think that's an important part of what makes her so unique.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about her in the book. I am not a fan. That is not news to anybody who knows me. I have been teaching and working with traditional lore of Day of the Dead for 36 years now, I think. Mm-hmm. And it really irks me when people say like, oh, she's Mictlacahuitl, or she is the goddess, she's the dark goddess, she's just like Kali. No. I have a person tell me, I will never forget, because this was like so beyond, oh, maybe you don't like her because you haven't integrated the concept of death. I'm like, maybe 36 years researching hasn't been enough. I know I'm arrogant AF. But speaking of arrogance, I love that what you say, and I concur. We're not telling people how to practice, because we are, at least you and I here this time, we're not that arrogant, right? We are not going to tell people what to practice. As a matter of fact, when Christian colonizers went to Mexico and tried to attack Doña Queta, I was really, really mad, because I'm like, what is it to you? You know, let people practice their religion. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to appropriation, Jay, I'm like, good, appropriate this. You know, let's see how it's going to go for you. I mean, is, I love that you put on your book, she is not a goddess. She is a saint.
Yes.
Have respect for her. Mm-hmm. And not because she's cool and rock and roll. Take her. But you know, enough about that. Buy the book, folks. Buy the book so you can learn more about it. The other part that I really, really like about the book, and I really respect this immensely, is when you talk about the differences in folk magic and how it's passed down by the grandmothers, by the aunts, by the uncles, and how it's not cookie cutter. Why do we want, it seems to be human nature, why do we want to industrialize and cookie cutter and make everything fit on a mold? What the heck? Why don't we understand folk magic? Tell us about it.
I think honestly, in a lot of ways, it comes down to us being able to confirm that we're not doing it wrong. I think it's a little bit like men going to like award shows or galas or whatever. If they're all wearing the same suit, it means that they haven't messed up. And I think people want to sort of do that a little bit when it comes to folk magic a lot of times, that, you know, okay, well, if it's this way and it matches somebody else's, then I know that I'm not doing something wrong. I think a lot of witchcraft right now, especially because social media has come into play in witchcraft, people are afraid of being embarrassed. And so if theirs looks too different from someone else's, it begins to bother them because they worry that something is wrong with them or with their practice. But the truth is, when it comes to folk magic in a lot of ways is about, it's very much like anything that requires a recipe. So all of us who have, you know, aunts and grandmothers and things like that, we all know that there was something that they used to squabble about, you know, especially in the kitchen, how to make something correctly. In my family, it was pie crust. You know, do you do it this way? Do you that way? Do you add water? Do you add milk? Do you add this much of that or whatever? And everyone thought that theirs was the best way to go. But at the end of the day, we all had pie and it was amazing, right?
Yes, yes.
And folk magic is very much the same way, where everyone's family will have a slightly different way of doing it. It accomplishes the same thing. It often uses the same tools, but how we go about it, the ratios, the things that we say during it, the reasons why we do certain things are all going to be different. And especially a lot of these traditions that were passed down tend to have their own spin on it. And what's funny is my mom used to tell me this sort of like a story, I guess, anecdote or a joke, but she used to tell me the story about how like somebody, you know, like fictitious setup of one day, you know, like a woman was learning to make a pot roast from her mom. And so the mom shows her how to do the pot roast. And then at the end, she cuts off both ends of the pot roast and then puts it in the pan. And the daughter goes, you know, well, why did you do that? And she goes, you know, I'm not sure. It's because my mom had always taught me that. And so they go to her mom and they're like, so why do you cut off the ends of the pot roast? And she's like, I'm not sure. It's why my mom always did it. So then they go to, did I break up again?
A little bit, but yeah, go continue. You were talking about cutting the pot roast.
Right.
With the grandma now.
Right. So they go to the grandma and they're like, so grandma, why did you teach them to cut off the ends of the pot roast? And she goes, oh, because my pan wasn't big enough. And so occasionally we have things like that, you know, because of necessity or because of what we had on hand, we had to change something. And then that got passed down. And so, you know, all of us are going to have a little bit of a different flavor as it passes down. And that's what makes folk magic so beautiful, is the variety and the fact that it's tailored to the people who just had what they had and nothing more, nothing less. And that's what makes it beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, sorry that we keep getting cut off, but you know, that's what happened with technology and it's not a big deal. We still are understanding each other. It's like speaking a second language. When you were talking about the pot roast and cutting it, what came to mind, I kid you not, about 6 years ago or maybe more, I started putting the snuffer right in the middle of the altar between the goddess candle and the god candle. And somebody asked me why you put it like that at the center. And I say, because if you turn the snuffer upside down, It has like a little cup, like a chalice, but the handle is like a little phallus. So half of it is feminine and half of it is masculine. I did it as a joke. All my witchy friends, apprentices, and everyone and anyone that has been to ritual with me, I have heard people say now, and the snuffer goes in the middle. And I'm like, oh my God, people actually listen to what you say. And there is no rhyme or reason. This was a joke, and I just started doing it as a joke. And it's now to them, because they're my apprentices, that's what the snuffer goes. You know, it is fantastic that magic, I don't think it can be contained. I think everybody has a different way of practicing. And that's why I love folk magic. If I like rules, I will be practicing some other different religion. But I love how in the book you say, you know, but if you read it on the book this way, fine. But if you heard your grandmother doing it three steps to the left,
mm-hmm.
that's where your grandmother and her grandmother and her grandmother are with you doing it. How important it is or not that we understand the language, like for y'all Mexican-Americans who were roped from your language. I know my answer, but I want to know your answer.
Do you mean like specifically like using Spanish? Spanish,
yeah. Like Spanish and the prayers and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a curious question, because I do think there is a very specific type of magic that comes from praying in Spanish. For instance, if I'm praying a Hail Mary in English, I feel very much connected to Mary. But if I do it in Spanish, then I feel very much connected with Guadalupe, which is very different than your standard sort of Mary understanding. So I do think that there is a very special magic to it, especially if your family before you was doing these prayers in Spanish, then they understand it more. It's more, you're more in unison with them, mm-hmm. Which I like. At the same time, though, I think it's important to also make room for the fact that speaking Spanish for a lot of Mexican Americans who did not grow up speaking Spanish is a very emotional experience. Because for many different reasons, because not only is it this feeling of reclaiming family heritage and reconnecting with our family, speaking Spanish really does that. And it's very moving when you first kind of start to do it and you first start to learn Spanish. On the other hand, though, it's extremely intimidating, because so many people around us see us as being Mexican or having Mexican background. Therefore, the first time that you open your mouth to speak Spanish, it has to be perfect. And a lot of us have experienced being around, you know, Mexicans from Mexico and attempting to speak Spanish and being ridiculed for it. Yep. And so for those of us who are Mexican American, it's very hard for us to practice, because we either practice it with white American people who speak Spanish, and therefore we sound like them, or we take a very big risk in trying to speak it with people who grew up speaking it, which is always kind of a mixed bag for us. And so why I wanted to put that in the book was to sort of give the reader maybe a private way to maybe start speaking Spanish on their own, you know, maybe through their prayers, because, you know, even if the Spanish doesn't come out perfectly, you know, God still understands you.
Yeah.
You know, the spirit still understands you. So give them a way to sort of maybe privately speak those words.
Yeah.
And maybe feel if it's different.
And, you know, to everybody who would like, I'm sure that YouTube is filled with prayers in Spanish, and you can, the way I will say perfected, but I know it's not perfect. The way I perfected my English and my pronunciation was through music and through movies and, you know, and really immersing into like English, because obviously English is not my first language, it's my second language. And yeah, talking about being intimidated or ridiculed, you know, I can tell you, like, from the other side of the coin, when I came to the United States and I see Mexican-American kids and I try to speak English, and the first thing that you find is like, haha, you don't know how to speak English. So it unfortunately goes both ways. Mm-hmm. And let me reiterate, we are minorities. We should unite. We should mm-hmm. not be ridiculing each other and being separated. If we were to ever really unite all of the Mexicans, and let alone all of the Latinx people, man, things will be so different. But enough about that. That's another show. Let me give you a little bit of background. I am a witch for hire. You and I do very similar work, whereas we both work for the community and within the community. And I do my limpias, I do my energy cleansings, and I've been doing those since I was very, very young. Just like you, I started healing with hands without knowing that I was healing with hands. And then I started doing cleanses without knowing that I was doing cleansings. And then later I understand, like, oh, there's a word for this. There's a word for that. And, you know, it means this and that. To see your chapter on limpias, I love it. Being a Mexican, but removed from Mexico 23 years, the Mexico that I know is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. So going to the book and reading about limpias, it really took me back. I have to say, not that you're looking for anybody's validation. It is so wonderfully written and explained. I love it. Why is so important, Jay, that everybody knows how to do this work? Please, for the love of the goddess.
Because you never know when you're going to need it. And those moments, they come up on you really fast too, especially when you're doing this work. And I think I kind of breezed by this story. Someone once told me a story, I can't remember who it was, about one of their cousins who was walking around in the cemetery where somebody else had been doing work. And they were like taking photographs of headstones or whatever, but they ended up stepping on some work somebody had left in the cemetery. And by the time they got this person home, they were barely conscious. They were throwing up. This stuff happens very quickly when we are in a spiritual community. And the thing too is that, you know, a lot of us who grew up, again, kind of late 90s, early 2000s witchcraft, where everything was Wicca, the party line was, you know, cursing and hexing is very, very rare. It will never happen to you in your entire life. And those who know how to curse are so spiritually evolved that they would never do it. And those of us who are brown know that spiritual warfare is a thing. I mean, you know, even, you know, a lot of folk magic too, you know, coming from Italy and all these other places around, spiritual warfare, getting hexed or cursed or jinxed is actually very common. And that was something too, where I really started to kind of enter into the Mexican-American community of magic, how much more prevalent that was than things like, you know, the Wiccan communities. And so knowing that simply just culturally, spiritual warfare is a thing that happens for us because we don't always have the ability to, you know, call law enforcement or get an attorney or, you know, we are communities where people with a lot more power take advantage of us. And so a lot of the places where we fight our battles is through magic. And so just living in kind of a time like this or an area where this is possible, knowing what to do if you step on something bad or if you accidentally, you know, stumble upon something you're not supposed to, or you break up with the wrong guy whose tia is a bruja, you know, I get those DMs about every other day. You know, knowing what to do is really important. And limpias too aren't just for hex breaking. You know, we can remove blockages within ourselves that keep us stuck, and, you know, that keep us from being brave and pursuing the things that we're supposed to pursue. And so by doing the limpias, we can unchain ourselves from a lot, and that includes hexes, but other things as well.
Yeah. And I truly believe, as skeptic as I can be as a witch, believe it or not, when one has to recognize toxic niceness and wishful thinking, and the fact that in certain pockets of the community, it doesn't happen. People don't hex, da da da. It is possible, not because you haven't experienced it, just dismiss it like it's not going to happen. And when people come to work in witches, such as us, they don't need that explanation of, oh yeah, no, this is not possible. They're desperate. Let us help them. You know, that's what we need, is we need to help them. And I think for people who choose the path of being the working witch, or like I call it, a witch for hire, you know, it is a huge responsibility. And I think it's a very noble work to do it for the community. And I love how you teach people how to do it on the book, and how also you give all these cautionary tales of, what if it is too much, seek a professional, because we all need help, and there's no shame on that, you know. And that is another toxic trait of our pagan community, like, oh, I can do it, I don't need help. Yes, you do. We all need help. We all need help, you know. So I really love it. Another part of the book that I really like, or rather a characteristic of the book, is for people such as me, it's not a cult, it's not a secret, that I am a very slow reader. I learn more from hearing, that's why I do podcasts. I love that this is not only an account of Mexican-American brujería or Mexican-American folk magic, but it's also an incredible reference book, because you can open this book on any chapter and actually learn from it. This is a very, very stupid question, but I have to ask you, was that intended, or was that a happy accident?
It is intentional, because I am one of those book readers, especially an occult book reader, where I will skip around, and I know we're not supposed to, but I will do that. And so, and I kind of talked to a few other people, and it turns out that that's actually very common, that people will kind of open up to the areas that they're most interested in. I do like to tell people, though, to always read the introduction part, chapter, and then skip around. And I can always tell people who haven't done that, because I think that creates a lot of the framework for what we see later, especially around the Catholic things and kind of why the Catholic things are involved. I think a lot of people just opened it up directly to the middle, saw Hail Mary, and freaked out. Which is, there's reasons for these prayers and stuff like that that get kind of talked about in the introduction. But I did very much want it to be something where, okay, someone could just kind of open it up, go to where they needed to go, and handle their business as much as they needed to.
Yeah. I will have to say, if what you're looking is for Mexican-American folk magic and how to, and even how to like understand it, you know, even if you don't want to practice this kind of magic in your pagan religious witchcraft, goddess, whatever it is, the label or labels that you put on yourself, this is a great reference book, not only for you to understand some Mexican witches, not all, and even if you don't want to practice, you know, to understand where we come from. Mm-hmm. Because this is where the majority of us Mexican practitioners of the blank come from, you know. Mm-hmm. this is where most of us started, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with African diaspora practices, but I cannot emphasize enough, we do not practice hoodoo, voodoo, santeria. That those are Afro-Caribbean. Those practices stood on the Caribbean islands. They never made it to Mexico. They never did, you know. Do you get that a lot too, that people ask you about hoodoo, voodoo, santeria, and all that?
Especially the santeria. That's the one that comes up a lot. Especially because when people see the saints, they go, oh, so this is santeria. And I'm like, no, I'm like, these are Catholic saints. And they're like, and then you can see their brain kind of starts to like spark a little bit, because they're like, wait, doesn't compute, Catholic and witchcraft don't go together. And then they go, oh, okay, so yeah, so it's like Santeria. And I'm like,
oh my God, no, it's not.
I have that happen a lot. Or people, there's a big misconception too, that Santeria and Brujeria are the same things as well. And I've had people very much argue with me about that and claim that I'm very off base, but I'm like, no, these are two very different practices. These are not the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because we have saints doesn't mean, yeah.
Yeah, it is amazing, you know, as a Mexican American, we live in a world of assumptions. Everything about us is assumed. And I invite you all to read this book so you don't assume and then you know the rest of the saying. Any plans for the future? Of course, we had just had our Day of the Dead. We had just had, you know, Samhain. So after or going towards the end of the year, do you have any plans? Are you going to be in any other podcasts or interviews or places or teaching? Or what's all happening on Jay's World?
Yeah, I'm going to be focusing a lot on my personal podcast. I have a podcast with my friend Britton, and it's called Invoking Witchcraft, and we've been having a really great time with it. So I'm going to be focusing a lot on that. I'm going to be focusing on a lot of writing through the new year. And then after the new year, I'm actually going to be going to Mexico, which is going to be very exciting. I have a trip planned. And then after that, in late February, early March, I still haven't set the dates yet. I hope to do American Brujeria, the course, where it's several weeks with me of classes, and we kind of go into the material in the book and kind of things that maybe I couldn't fit into the book because I came and did my full word count on the book, and there's still some other stuff too. So I'm going to try and do a course over several weeks with that material early next year. So mm-hmm. Look out for that as well.
So spring-ish?
Yeah, spring. Yeah, late February, March time. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. So you are not on every social media. You be the one that is not everywhere. I have to say this to people. It's gonna be so silly. It took me months to contact him because I'm so silly. I never went directly to his Instagram to look for his email. I was so adamant that I needed to find you on Facebook and that I needed to find your email magically on the internet. And then finally the goddess illuminated me. And I actually look at your Instagram information, and that's where I found your email. Thank you, goddess. But you are hard to pin, man. I mean, that's a good thing, I guess. For people that want to follow you, the one social media, Instagram, tell us the handle so people remember.
Absolutely. Yes. My Instagram is at Oregon Wood Witch with little underscores in between. I do have other platforms, but they're not as exciting. I do have a TikTok, but I have not been on there in a very long time. And I do have Twitter, but I mean, nothing, I don't post anything very exciting there.
Yeah, no. I think each person, you know, find the place or the space where they feel more comfortable. And I see that you flourish on Instagram, and that is great. And that's your home. And I mean, everybody can find you. Not everybody's Laura that cannot find your email, though. But anyway, thank you, goddess, that I find you, that I found you, that you're here, that we have done this wonderful interview. I really am very happy to have had you on the show. And all that is left for me is to leave you the microphones and the space so you can say goodnight to your audience.
Good night, everybody. And remember that you are loved and not alone in this world.
Thank you, everybody. And of course, I will see you on our next Lunatic Mondays, Lunas Lunaticos. Please check out all the work that is done on CSMP. You can find us on Facebook, and you can find us on, obviously, the website for Circle Sanctuary. And of course, Jay and everybody that has been on this show. Gee, never forget that you are loved. Good night.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.